Holy cow, it's past 7.
Where the heck is everybody?
Justin's on his way.
Okay. Because we don't have a quorum without him, right?
But we do have a quorum.
We do have a quorum. Yeah.
Should we just start? Let him come in late and shame him?
Mm-hmm. Put a little guilt on him.
You think Ken? Anybody hear from Ken?
Nothing.
Okay.
His house looks pretty dark.
All right, you ready? Okay, call in the meeting to order. Reminder to the public that this is being recorded. Is there any public comment on items not on the agenda? Seeing no public except for Kevin, the wonder dog. We will move to the consent agenda. Is there anything anybody would like pulled from that? If not, I'll take a motion to approve.
Motion to approve consent agenda as presented.
Second.
Okay, JJ.
Yes.
Walt?
Yes.
Pete?
Yes. Malcolm Malone, that must be you.
That is me.
Welcome.
Thank you.
We're very glad you're here.
Happy to be here.
Yeah. Chief, what do you want to say?
We are very happy Mac is here.
Good. Mac, that's Mac. What we can call you?
Yeah.
Mac.
All
right.
Just don't call you late for supper, right? Yeah. So if he looks familiar to you guys, he was a volunteer with our department for many years.
Fantastic.
And then he grew up and went to South Metro outside of Denver for a few years and realized Montana was just that great and wanted to come back. And we were very fortunate to get him back as our training captain. So comes to us with a wealth of informational knowledge on ambulance transporting. He's a paramedic himself, so, and just a lot of good experience from a different area of the fire service as well.
What years were you serving here?
2015 and 2019.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I lived here and at the Ray Station.
Right.
As well.
Right, so I think my son David was serving then. David Geddes, I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, so you met everybody. I know I met you during your interview.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Pete Geddes.
Yeah. I'm the slack ass that couldn't make it.
He's the slack ass. His dog performs better than him most times. All right, here comes Justin. Good. Well, welcome.
Thank you. Yeah. Very happy to be back.
Yeah.
And Mac's already, you know, hitting the ground running in his job duties. He's already done Catapalooza. Done interviewing of a pool and is starting Recruit Academy tomorrow.
Yeah. Great.
Justin. Sorry, everybody.
Yeah, no worries.
Whatever.
Shame on you. Yeah, we put you on 3 committees.
Nice. Let's put Ken on a whole bunch, too. I call Ken as I'm headed up Cottonwood thinking that he's already here. Yeah. And telling him that I was going to be late so he could tell everybody. He's like, shoot, I'm not there. And so he's like, sorry.
Good. Well, we just started it. We just met Mac. I don't know if you've met Mac.
How's it going?
Good, dude.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Glad to be back. Nice to have you.
Yeah, thank you.
So, Ken's on the way. I thought what we could do is just wait until he gets here before we get into the RFP discussion at the capital replacement things, which are big items for things right now. Yeah. So, let's go down to just get number 6 knocked off. Pancake breakfast, anything we need to know about that? I'm going to be out of town, unfortunately.
It's Saturday.
Any COVID concerns or anything like that?
We're gonna do outside.
We're gonna run it as a regular event, in hopes people will just be responsible for themselves. So we're gonna run it as a traditional pancake breakfast that we have. There's been multiple departments who have done it so far, even in the current spike that we've had, and have not really seen any great effects from it, so.
Well, positive.
So saying inside and all the guests will go through the line and no waiters and waitresses?
No, I don't know that we'll do that again. I mean, we specifically did that because of the COVID lockdown and restrictions we were in from the health department, and currently we're not under those restrictions.
So. Nice.
Well, the weather looks like it's going to be good enough that you leave the door open.
Exactly.
So airflow seems to be a big deal.
Yeah. So will you have like a box of masks out if people want to wear them or anything like that?
Yeah, we absolutely can.
Yeah,
yeah.
I would do that.
People would prefer that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hi, honey.
Mm. Hey, Ken.
That's Mac.
Hi,
KJ.
That's Kim.
We saved the meat of the agenda for you. We were just talking now about the pancake breakfast and all that kind of stuff.
So, can't wait.
Can't wait.
Good pancakes.
Any other board concerns about COVID-related pancake breakfast stuff? The pancakes will be good. The eggs will be good.
That would be great.
Be great turnout. Anything we want to have in terms of information to hand out to residents that we can think of that might be good? I mean, just for example, like in the past, we've had those red sheets, call 911, mm-hmm. check your fire alarm thing, and, you know, when the...
Yeah, I mean, we'll have our typical array of, yeah, the 72-hour kits, yeah. The home inspections. We'll generally even throw, like, the Living with Fire and Ready, Set, Go pamphlets out. Emergency management has given us a couple of things on the highlight early morning system. So, I mean, typically we've always had that stuff laid out for people to grab. And,
yeah, it's just a great opportunity to get a lot of people to put the eyes on whatever we want them to get on.
Yeah.
Anything else, board members?
Servers are wearing gloves. Do we want them wearing, servers wearing masks? Or, I mean, some people are crazy about that. I mean, I don't know if it'll have any bad press of, I mean, some people might get upset. That's why I just don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think the people who are truly, truly going to be concerned are either not going to come or they're going to wear masks themselves.
Okay.
I mean, you go to any restaurant in Bozeman right now and your server or cook isn't wearing a mask, so.
Okay.
I don't know that we need to be hugely concerned or really tight about that.
I'm cool without it. I'm just...
You just don't see the headline, emergency services providers facilitate massive COVID outbreak.
No, it's just weird because more and more in town, I'm seeing more people wearing them. I mean, I went to Target the other day and every employee in Target's wearing them. I don't know if it's just because it's a national chain. And so, I don't know, where before they weren't doing that. And REI is requiring you to wear one to walk inside. I mean, it's from Seattle, but I don't know.
We did present that line of, you know, our services and the plan to the health department, and
perfect.
They signed off on it. And their one request was to make sure all the servers had gloves on.
Perfect.
So
sounds good to me.
Perfect. And a box of masks. Sounds good. All right, let's go back up to the agenda then. Item number two, the preliminary RFP for architectural services. Brian, no need to apologize for that. Obviously, what you saw we're trying to do is to just make sure people are not thinking that while our current bond isn't paid off to 2027, we're going out next year for another bond. So the sense of the board was, let's just get ahead of this game if we can get a little bit more information from a firm. We were chatting before you came in, like if we gave a firm the blueprints for this building, you know, which cost $2.9 or $2.8 million back in 2014, what would that look like today? Just having that number would be really illuminating for us in terms of our planning on how we want to approach this kind of stuff. And, you know, since I know nothing about the building trades, it'd be interesting to hear from some pros, like, is a phased approach a smart move or is a dumb move? You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so there's some interesting things right now. Fort Ellis, who's in the middle of it, they are doing a phased approach. And they're actually starting kind of opposite from what we had talked about. They're actually starting with their bays and like their offices, training room, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I would like to meet with Mike Seck, the fire chief at Fort Ellis, to kind of talk about what, because he kind of presented their plan to fire council and the price tag for just what their first phase is shocking.
Like 10 million?
No, five million just for the
base,
basically.
Of similar square footage to what we have, or what kind of
similar square footage? Yeah.
Yeah.
But obviously, that number is shocking. But it's hard to say. You can really drive the price off depending on what you're looking at. Like this building, we wanted it comfortable but not
fancy
filled gold.
Yeah.
Type of thing too. So.
Yeah.
There's a new advantage that I learned about touring the new public safety facility downtown, in that the more we can get going on it, without having a real timeline, gives the contractors the opportunity to be able to find the deals for the steel and the lumber and lock those in over time and not be in a rush and have to take whatever the market is at the time. So there may be some advantage there, knowing that our timeline is 5 to 7 years, just roughly, that they get a chance. We pick the contractor, and the contractor gets to go out and shop that and watch for those deals or wait for that price to come down. Because right now, that the cost of building materials is a little high, as they say.
Labor's high, everything's high.
Yes.
Yeah, it'd just be interesting from my perspective to get this process started, as you suggest, and learn a little bit more about it. Like, if you, I mean, that's an interesting thing. The contractor's like buying steel in year one, but you're not going to build till year four, but it's just sitting out in the yard rolling in on it. Because you got a screaming deal on it.
And that's what, I think it was Dick Anderson or one of those guys doing the new public safety building. Mm-hmm. They locked in their steel prices 3 years ago or 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so that they're able to continue. Interesting little piece that I hadn't really thought of, but it's now enough of a cost difference that it really makes millions of difference.
Yeah. So just a couple thoughts come to mind. Instead of or in addition to running an RFP, would the Fort Ellis chief come and just sit with us and chat for a little bit? Would that be something to do before we do an RFP or in parallel with it?
I think it could be in parallel with it. One thing I was going to pitch to you guys, I know how you love committees, but Chris and I have been talking a lot about, you know, the ideas for the Ray Station. So as you guys are aware, currently we have a little different model as far as residency over there because of the house. And we've just kind of been banding around the pros and cons of, you know, what would be the pros to keeping that model versus going to just a straight residency model like we have at this station. So that gets in kind of a lot of the conceptual ideas of what we want the station to address. And then obviously we wanted to address those current issues we're in, and then obviously for future growth. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, we could just kind of, I can bring you just updates operationally from the department that we came up with, or if you guys want to do a committee to speak.
Are you thinking building a building that could be a residence and then have a separate structure that's a...
Well...
So that you can continue where they just rent it out and they can drink a beer in it if they want, or...
Right. I mean, that's kind of what what we're weighing is, you know, what if any, are going to be the negative impacts if we... Because the way, at least Chris and I have discussed it and see it, you know, having a rental model like we have at the house right now, if that... It's very difficult to attach that to the fire station. Mm-hmm. Because of the freedom that those renters have. Mm-hmm. So what are the negatives to say, you know, should we just eliminate that model and just go to a strictly residency model like we have here, where they're just more restricted on what they can do because they're living in the fire station? You know, some of the challenges with, if we could certainly, and there are departments around the country that have that model, even in a newer station, they just have residency corridors separated in a separate building from the fire station where the trucks are housed and the bays are. It's just, when you think about planning for future growth, right, if we would ever, to transition that into, you know, if we'd ever need a paid crew in that type of building, it just doesn't work as good. If that's separated in that way. But there could be also opportunities to just expand and move. We have a lot of room at Cottonwood, which I don't know what we would run into. I'd have to research as far as, I don't know if there's any covenants or anything, zoning issues up there, but we have a lot of room in back. We could build a rental model units up there and then just build a new fire station at Ray that mimicked this setup here, and just utilize it as a rental or residence station like this one is. Mm-hmm. those are just the ideas we've been batting around.
What's Fort Ellis's plan? Are they going to have a residential facility like?
That's their second phase, and that is their overall goal, is to have residency facilities very similar to this model built into the fire station.
Right.
I know, just knowing one of their trustees, they're running into a financial issue with getting there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're also trying to do it without having to do a bond issue or anything like that.
So how they can do that?
They have some money saved, and they did increase their fees, but they're still coming up short.
Because they're a fire service area.
They're a fire service.
Yeah, so they were able to raise their fees without going to the voters.
So one thing that this conversation raises is, do we want to have alignment and agreement on the model before we go out and start spending money, or do we want to? You know, again, these things can happen in parallel.
Well, you know, it seems to me if we can do it at a reasonable cost, if we know conceptually a couple of A, B, C options that can be incorporated into the concept design, you know, I think the further we can get down the road in terms of having a product that we can present to the taxpayers,
mm-hmm.
because the only way we can pull the trigger on, you know, saying we need to squirrel some steel away or whatever, you know, we're going to have to position ourselves mm-hmm. to be able to have that approved by the voters before we can do it. So I think if we can get something put together that we can present and get a feel from the voters, you know, we can go over the pluses and minuses and what the options might be with Cottonwood and so on, and have a presentation that's made to the voters and get some feedback from the voters and what some of their preferences are too and what they're willing to support. You know, I think that might be helpful in that process to have something that's concrete that we can discuss in the course of getting voter approval for a project down the road. And so if it's within the budget to conceptually come up with a drawings for ABC options, I'd say I think we should go for it. And if it's not within the budget, then maybe we need to prioritize A and B over three or four different possibilities.
Now, it's interesting to sort of expand the scope of work to include a review of the district's properties and the mm-hmm. potentials there. I hadn't even thought about Cottonwood, but
right.
there's 5 acres there, right?
It's over three.
Yeah, 3 acres, yeah. whatever. Probably zero covenants on that thing.
Right.
I mean, that would be interesting. That's mm-hmm. that's something I hadn't even thought of.
So. But the point of Ray Station was that's where the activity is going to grow.
Right. But in terms of like, you know, a residential or a rental kind of, it's like basically like workforce housing.
Mm-hmm. Right? Exactly.
Yeah.
So, right. So you could build a model that had residents at the Ray Station and then rental at Cottonwood.
Right.
And dependent upon, and I don't know if the land is large enough, the lot would be large enough to accommodate a useful design at Ray that would accommodate a standalone building or not. I mean, that would be something to take into consideration too.
Yeah, or an architect, we'd have to give them our ideas and someone draw that.
You might even say the bays at Ray are gonna work just fine for the next 15 or 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And what we really want is that residence facility
mm-hmm.
and somehow where people don't have to run through the snow to get to the trucks in the middle of the night. But. You know, you think about it creatively like that, and then what our limiting factor is people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Always, you know, we want to make sure we're continuing to attract good people.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and we have a leadership meeting coming up, well, Monday, where I can just truly hammer out with our current leadership we have on the department and say, what would the impact be if we just eliminated that rental model and mm-hmm. just had just resident mm-hmm. facilities.
Mm-hmm. So I guess my suggestion would be before we kick this loose is to maybe have a list of priorities that we can include in the RFP.
Sure,
in terms of
do some internal scoping.
Internal scoping prior to turning this loose as an RFP so that we have more guidance as to what we're interested in having what product we're looking for with the money that we can spend, and what makes sense to include in that list of priorities. So I think, yeah, some, that internal scoping sounds like a good idea to me.
Sure. Other board members?
How long has Fort Alice been working on theirs?
Years. I mean, they ran into a significant land issue because Fort Alice around that Bear Canyon area, the church, the Seventh-day Adventist church owns so much of that area that they couldn't find land. And they actually found land, but they had to lock into an agreement like the race station was locked into, that they have the land as long as it's going to be a fire station.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And if they ever decide not to use it as a fire station, it goes back to the previous
owner. Yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we're fortunate in that regard that we don't have that hanging over. Mm-hmm.
So my sense of the conversation is that we kick it back to you guys,
sure.
Maybe using the draft language I wrote, and then expanding that to after your meetings, coming back so the RFP includes just more details, more information.
Yeah.
Like, we'd like to explore these three options.
Yep.
Whatever. And do you need our help with that, or do you guys want to start this as a staff before you invite us into it?
I'm comfortable starting it as a staff and kind of bring back what we come up with to you guys and go from there.
Any public comment? Kevin?
Kevin's sleeping.
Okay, anything else on that? Thanks, that was very helpful. Capital replacement plan, this looks like you, Brian.
Yep. So there's no decisions to be made on this. It had been roughly 2 years since really the plan had a good update. So I went through and overhauled everything, brought it up to currently what we have to reflect that, and did some adjusting even on costs to what they're more realistically are seeing right now. So the plan itself, if you guys aren't familiar with this, there's like roughly three pieces to it. There's a the improvement plan itself, which looks like this one.
Page one, it looks like.
Yep. Then there's a cost interval plan. And then the last part is a multi-page one that is kind of the per year capital expenses. So just what I wanted to kind of make the, and as Walt mentioned, these numbers can look shocking. And they were to me when I started to calculate them. But there's been some things that have come through the last couple of years that have impacted the plan quite a bit. You know, as we continue to grow and we continue to meet that growth, one, obviously, you can see in the improvement plan itself, our projected revenue only grows by 2%, but we have a 3% index or inflation index on that. So technically, it gets more expensive.
Before we start into this,
yep.
Which I really appreciate, just for everybody's edification, can we run across the columns A through H, and you tell us what they are? So obviously,
yep.
The fiscal year is the fiscal year.
Yep.
So let's start with B, projected revenues, which you were just talking about.
Yep, so projected revenues. So I didn't actually start this from zero. I just continued the plan from where it started a few years ago. So a few years ago, we projected, and we started with, I believe, $300,000 that we would contribute per year to the plan.
Okay, so these are contributions.
Yeah.
Yep, capital, yep, reserve.
Right. Okay, can we call it that? Can we relabel B?
We certainly can.
And just call it capital contributions. And
yep.
And when you say 2%, you're assuming it grows 2% a year?
2% a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
So just, but if you
contribution can grows, or we were making 2% on that?
The contribution grows.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just making that really clear, I think, is really important for the public so they understand this. So.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep. So And I don't know, Walt, if you can help me remember why we picked 300,000.
I think that was what we were able to contribute. I think that's kind of what we've been contributing over a few year average. And the last couple of years, we've been able to beat that. But I'd like to address that a little later. But that's where that came from. It was kind of an average over a few years. It was around 300,000.
Yeah. So C, or column C, is the replacement cost for the year, which is, so column D is the 3% index inflation, or inflation indexed. So that basically says every year the cost grows by 3%. And that is reflected in column C. So not to confuse you guys, but going over to column H would be the unadjusted. So that is the cost intervals of page 2. That's column H, is the total of that as it stands. Column C is the total of that with the 3% per year added to it.
Okay, so column C is the actual annual cost of replacing capital stock. Is that right?
In that year.
So let's, okay. I'm just trying to think about our public, trying to work through this, you know? I'm thinking we should call this annual capital. Or is that obvious, Walt?
I think it's, what we have to do, be a little bit correct. It's that year, it's that annum, but it's not necessarily a per annum, because it varies dependent upon what's being replaced that year.
Right, and we could choose not to do any replacement that particular year. So it's just trying to get a sense of what's worn out that needs replacement.
Yeah.
Right. Is that right?
So it would be, better language, it'd be a matter of getting it fit in the cell, would be adjusted replacement cost, because you have the unadjusted age. And so C would be the adjusted replacement cost.
Okay. So column B bears no relationship to column C. That's just what we're putting into the account.
That's just what we're putting in, right.
And column D is your inflation index.
So the one question I wanted to ask on that too, so on the second page, we've adjusted the capital replacement item costs to roughly current values?
Current values, yeah.
So shouldn't we be starting...
And this is the second page? Is that the second?
That's the second page.
Okay.
Shouldn't we be starting at the inflation index for 2022 at 100 then?
We could, yeah. I left that as it is, but the fact that I updated cost intervals, we could reset that to one.
Yeah. Or that would seem like it would make, you know, since you adjusted those costs to reflect current costs for each item, that the inflation index should start. That becomes our base index.
Yep.
Okay. E is pretty self-explanatory. That's the stuff.
So that's the stuff, what's up in that year.
Right. And then starting balance is what we got in the account.
Yep.
Okay.
And then that column F is a running account balance.
Right.
Based off of what's listed in E and the cost in C. And it figures in the annual contribution.
Okay, so the balance, the number in F should be the number in C minus the number in B? That doesn't seem right.
So it would be the previous year.
Okay, starting balance.
So plus B.
Got it.
In the subsequent year minus C.
Yep.
You just might want to put that in there. That's really helpful.
The equation. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess the other thing I wonder would help with the flow. I wonder if we moved H, because you've got the adjusted. So you've got the total cost unadjusted. And then followed by D, the inflation index would be the column after that. And then the adjusted replacement cost after the inflation index.
It's just saying like move H between B and C?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
And then put D between following where you moved H and then replacement cost after that.
So what do your columns read now, Walt, from left to right? You get A.
So A would be fiscal year.
Yeah.
B would be
capital
revenue.
Contribution. Yeah.
Right, the capital contribution.
Yeah.
C would be the unadjusted cost.
So that's H now?
Currently H.
Right, okay.
And then D would be the inflation index.
Okay, and that stays. E stays.
Well, and then E could be the, you could either shift E over and put the description at the end, put E next to the inflation index,
mm-hmm.
the adjusted replacement cost, what's currently C.
Okay. And where does F go?
And then F could stay, that's the last column. So that would be the, and maybe, so you've got your starting balance and then the header would be, so you've got your starting balance at the beginning of this process, and then it'd be current balance, you know, for every year afterwards. And actually the starting balance in it would be, you know, T zero's mm-hmm. current mm-hmm. balance. Mm-hmm.
So in row 2, column F, 718160, is that the starting balance for the next fiscal year going forward?
It'd be the next number over.
Next number over.
Or excuse, no, I'm sorry, you're right. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's the current balance. Yep.
Yeah, so yeah. If you took everything in E and spent it, essentially, F is what you have left over.
And actually, maybe before we get too far, because I think you've done a nice job, if you go to what Brian did on the third and fourth pages, it goes over two pages, and so he breaks it down by year, what's being replaced, and the cost of each item. And so you can see where the number comes from. Or actually, so what? Oh, yeah, 744. Yeah, 744. Yeah. So if you look at, you built it.
Yeah, in the multi-page third piece, breaking it down by year. So, like in A5 for 2022, what's listed out to the right of that is everything that's mm-hmm. listed in E of the improvement plan.
Right.
And then below that is basically in order the replacement cost for each unit. The number that is below, so in line 7, is what we'd estimated as a salvage value of that unit. So what this one also kind of tries to accommodate for is the salvage of each unit per year.
So the only thing that maybe perhaps should be carried over is instead of L5 or L6, it should be M7 that's carried over to what's currently H2.
To the unadjusted
right.
total.
Okay, so here's where I get confused back on your first sheet. When you're looking in F3 and we've got a deficit of 228,794,
mm-hmm.
what is that?
So that is for that year. So if you look at F, so we're starting at 1.3 million mm-hmm. roughly.
Right.
And then if we spend everything in that first 2022 year, it gives us a balance of that 718,160.
Mm-hmm. So that would imply, from looking at C3, that in that year, 23, we're going to spend $1.2 million, mm-hmm. and that's what gives us a deficit, right?
That brings okay. a deficit, yeah.
Right. And what's kind of an eye-opener, if you carry this out, you know, according to the whole plan, be a little bit less if we, you know, brought our inflation index down a little bit to a base of 1, but still it's going to be a significant number in 2052 that we're in a deficit at these current levels of projection with regard to revenue and cost inflation.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big lesson there. I think we're going to have a little bit of a change tweaking some of the numbers, you know, including salvage value and going to one, but big lesson's still going to be that it's...
It's $11 million in the hole.
Right.
Yeah.
Something a little bit less than that. But
yeah.
I think the lesson there is that we want to be careful in our budgeting, even though it seems like, you know, we're having pretty significant increases
in mill levy,
in, you know, in the amount of revenue that we're receiving because of growth in the county. You know, who knows how long we're going to grow at that kind of growth rate.
Mm-hmm.
But I suspect that it'd be, I don't know, to project that type of growth rate out that far into the future might be a bit generous.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the lesson there, in my mind anyway, is that we want to be a little bit careful in how we allocate funds beyond operating expenses to other aspects of the enterprise, mm-hmm. beyond capital replacement and capital improvements on our capital contributions. You know, there was some discussion at one point about perhaps maybe using some of those monies to, you know, pay off instead of bonding everything that would be associated with a building project, paying some off. I think that's where we have to exercise care as a board in making those types of decisions in light of these projections to maintain our capital replacement plan.
And that's the point of the plan, right, is to put this down on paper to mm-hmm. make everybody aware that, yeah, I mean, I think to certain people it can look like we're sitting on a lot of money, but when you look at this plan, we're really not. Mm-hmm. Like, in fact, we're not technically sitting on enough money in a way if we were truly gonna. And, you know, Jason did a very good job, and I don't see us changing at all. We've been a department of savings. Like, every year we try to look at the budget and save what we can, and not be at a $0 at the end of the fiscal year, like trying to save up. So yes, this is what we plan on contributing every year, but what extra can we save in the budget to bring that number up? Because mm-hmm. If you look at the cost interval sheet, at the very bottom, that 411,664,33 number, on page 2 at the bottom, that is basically the per year cost of all units.
Right.
So as it currently stands, that's what you would have to put away without any inflation index to fully fund the plan.
A present value kind of approach.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Using this year as the base. Yeah.
That's a very important number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I mean, the implication is next year we want to get to 411,664.
Right,
exactly. In that capital account.
Right, and obviously, you know, if you look at this point that you brought up on 2023, you know, when you have even at that amount, you know, there's the what the average contribution needs to be, and then the cash flow aspect of it,
mm-hmm.
and you know, it's kind of like breathing for 20 minutes. Mm. Twice as hard and not breathing for 20 minutes. You know, in the long run, you've breathed the average amount, but you're dead.
Yeah, right.
You know, that's kind of what's important about this too, is the cash flow aspect of it. But I think the 411 is a pretty good number for us to take into consideration for future budgeting.
And there's been some significant impacts to the plan and just changes that have occurred in the last couple of years. I just did rough calculations of a full, you know, prior to us moving as a county to this 800 megahertz radio system. On our traditional radio system, we could have done a full radio replacement of every single radio the department owned and spent roughly $469,000 on it. And to address the new radio plan with the 800 megahertz, to do a full radio replacement of every radio we own in the department, we would be upwards of, I believe it was $935,000 just in the need to go into a dual banded radio has that type of cost impact to it.
Well, if I look at that right, that's 20-25% of the annual budget gets put away into capital.
Right,
rough.
Yeah, after our bond payment, that'd be about right. Yeah.
Okay, what's normal, or what would be considered prudent for a percentage to be put away to capital improvement?
As an industry or for us as specifically?
As an industry.
I don't know that I could address that. Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know.
How much should you be putting away for capital or improvement every year? Okay.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Are we out of balance or in balance?
Seems like we're out of balance if you look at this.
For what we're doing.
Yeah. And that's the control we have.
Yeah.
We don't have to do all this stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
But I will remind you, there are a lot of departments that go out, you know, every time they want to buy a truck, they're going out to the taxpayers too,
right.
You know, without budgeting for
this. Hey, I lived that for years. It ain't no fun.
Right. I drove it for years.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, I mean, it was ridiculous. It's like, we need turnout gears. We have to have mill levy.
Yeah.
3.8 mils. Like, what? Crazy. Yeah. So I'm thinking.
So consistency in my mind. If we can make consistency is
important. Yeah. Absolutely with you. So I'm thinking, like on this dashboard, we have this big space here, like timing and cash receipts. Is that really important information to anybody? I'm thinking that this information for the public is way more important. And this number of 411-644, and you may want to mess with it to have it reflect inflation or explicitly say this does not include inflation, is the capital, you know, replacement contribution that this department is shooting for every year. Or we could put it in our capital improvement reserve. We could put, you know, that 400 line up there. Just to let people know that that's where we think, and this goes out to what, 2052? You know, so this is long range planning, and the implication of being behind significantly on this curve, and I know we have lots of things we can play with, is somewhere around $10 million in the red. That's really scary to me.
Right.
So, you know, just in terms of engaging the public, like these spreadsheets are great for internal use. And the changes in the languages is really important, but nobody's going to look through these things.
Right.
They want to know what the bottom line is. And then they also want to know, well, you guys could buy one less truck next year. Yes, we could do that. We might choose to do that. But, you know, capital replacement planning is something that we could not afford to do years and years ago. And we've finally just gotten around to it. And that's why it's so important to remind people, yeah, we could give you your money back in the form of lower property taxes, but it's just robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Yeah.
I guess the other factor that we need to include in this discussion too is this work that Brian's put together is capital replacement. So we're not talking about the two other aspects of our capital budgeting. One being capital improvement reserves, and the second being building repair and replacement.
Yeah.
That's not included in these calculations.
Right.
And so.
But important.
Important, right? Yes. Obviously. Those are funds that need to be maintained by this department too. So something to take in further consideration in this analysis.
But maybe you just do some thinking about how you would represent that capital.
Okay.
What we're trying to do here is spare the taxpayers in the future a massive hit because we didn't put enough money away. And just think of it as continuous improvement, you know, try to get it on the spreadsheet. I would get rid of, does anybody care about the time and cash receipts? I don't know why we put that on there.
I look forward every day.
I thought you did. But there's a whole lot of space here.
Yeah.
A whole lot of real estate we can use for more important information to communicate to the public.
I mean, you could take that and put it in a little note that says we get our money these months and this month.
Yeah, or just, I don't think anybody cares.
So Pete, you're thinking of like an estimated projected need for capital replacement for a few years in advance.
Yeah, exactly. You could do something like here, like the importance of capital replacement contributions. And you know, our long range planning indicates we should be contributing roughly $400,000 before inflation every year to our capital to meet our projected capital needs.
Sure.
One possibility in terms of layout, if everybody felt as though that extraneous information about timing of cash receipts is to shift station debt up to that cell, and then keep all the capital discussion on the lower that lower third.
And you could do it as a narrative, which is probably the way to do it, and that is the way to do it, and say we have things we can control, we can choose to defer capital maintenance, but in our judgment, that you know puts us and the taxpayers behind the eight ball ever more.
Yeah.
So just so people get a sense of what we're trying to do with this capital fund, because it, you commonly get, well, you guys are sitting on all this money. Why don't you give some of it back to us?
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll just come and take it from you. And ask you for it. So I think that's a good suggestion. Keep the capital, the whole bottom line, sort of.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It boils down to a service, you know, what level of service. If the expectation in Highlight Hill Fire District by our constituents is to maintain service levels, you know, this is what it takes to maintain that service level.
So before we move on, let me just make sure I got this written down right now. So I have column A, B, and H, D,
E and F.
Then E and F.
Right.
So A, B, H, D, E, and F.
And then title. Yep. Some title.
Or you do F, and then, and have the description at the very end.
So in column B, which we're going to call capital contributions, mm-hmm. we don't get to your 411 number until 2038.
Right.
Yeah. That's not good.
Actually, Justin had that might be even better. Put description at the very end.
Go F, E.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then this sheet, you've got highlight department capital replacement costs for fiscal year 22. So this is actually what we're looking at in the next fiscal year is replacing, right? This is just a breakdown of everything you're saying.
I think that's the whole.
The cost interval, that would reflect everything. We have. Yeah. So it's broken down by item. So column A on the cost interval is everything we've identified as a capital item.
Right. So this is not what we're going to buy in 22?
No.
Okay.
That would be everything we currently own that's capitalized.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So this is our capital stock.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. The third page is the one that, third and fourth page breaks that down on an annual basis.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess that's the other adjustment too in your notes is adjust the unadjusted cost by. Your projected salvage value.
Oh, to include. So you want to see salvage value in that unadjusted cost?
Right. Deduct the salvage value off. So instead of the 74,800, it'd be 74,800 less the 12,750.
Okay.
732.50. Seems like that would make sense. Okay.
So given the ambulance is coming in 2035 now. And you want to replace two trucks next year. What's your thinking on when we've got to get that order in for those
vehicles? So ordering a fire truck does not happen fast.
Yeah.
And that's one thing you'll notice, like an ambulance is listed in 2022. Because of COVID, that ambulance we bought has been delayed so much that it actually pushed into this year. Like, it technically was written into last year, but we never spent the money on it because it wasn't being built. But on average, you can assume at least a year and a half to build a fire truck before you get it. There's roughly 6 months of speccing and then the sending out RFP, selecting, awarding the bid.
Going to Wisconsin.
Going to Wisconsin, and then it's at least roughly 300-day build period from when they're going to get the truck in to when they're going to finish it. So we could, I mean, if we can come up, and I'm trying to work with a couple of apparatus companies to figure out, we have two apparatus listed 1 year after the next. What cost savings could we run into if we just got two at the same time? And then from what I understand, there is cost savings. I just don't have, they haven't provided me the numbers yet of what those cost savings would be. But if we were going to plan on trying to get a truck and funding a truck, even in fiscal year 2023, I mean, we could start the planning process of that now and starting that process of speccing. Because theoretically, we won't be cutting the check till, well, at this point, we'd be even lucky to be cutting the check in 2023 and just the time it takes to get it built.
Well, I mean, that's at your discretion when you think you need to start that process, but
yeah.
I would kind of think you'd want to start it earlier given all that's going on.
Yeah.
And I guess So in the more immediate future, so when we're looking at, say, the 5-year planning horizon, looking at that cash flow, are we going to have to make adjustments on what's replaced then in order to not have that large cash flow deficit?
Which sheet are you looking at, Walt?
The replacement plan. So I'm looking at what's currently fiscal year 2023 through, say, 2026. And every one of those years, we're in a deficit position.
Mm-hmm.
So implicate, and I know based on what you've just said, we're going to be pushing out some of those expenditures anyway.
Yeah.
So that's going to be something that we may have to make some adjustments on in terms of when those things happen so that we don't, because that cash flow obviously is something that we can't manage.
Right.
A negative cash flow like that.
Yeah, and as you guys know, this is like a projection. Like we end up stretching years of service on equipment and getting it more. So though that, I mean, the two engines are going to be a pretty high priority because those trucks are just fairly worn out.
Yeah.
But just because everything's listed in that column E doesn't mean it's an absolute
You were hoping for one in 22 and one in 23, right? New trucks.
Right. Yeah. One, for fiscal year 2023 and 2024.
Oh, 23 and 24.
Yeah.
So we get through next year with what we got. Building next year is the plan, like specs and
exactly
bids, all that in 22. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So replacing both of the twins,
mm-hmm.
you think we can get $20,000 a piece for them?
I think so. I've kind of had John Culbertson with the fire school kind of put the feelers out there, and he said his staff could probably sell them pretty easily for us in around the state of Montana. So, and that engine we sold to Space and Ed, Muscle Shell County. I mean, we got $20,000 for that truck. So.
Mm-hmm.
Engine 6-1 or something.
6-1, the old engine 6-1.
Yeah, nice.
So let me ask you one more question about column B. If you put your replacement number, that 411, whatever, in column B with the inflation adjusters, do we come out balanced then? Isn't that the implication? If we were putting in 411 every year adjusted for inflation, we balance in 2052?
I'd have to run the numbers on it. I mean, the one thing that's kind of affecting the plan is that we don't replace everything per year, mm-hmm. so it kind of creates a backlog,
mm-hmm.
Which impacts the balance to start with.
Yeah, I think it's a cash flow problem. So even if you had that contribution, that averaging works out, but you'd end up with some negative cash flow years.
Mm-hmm.
That's where...
Just depending on what we're going to replace.
Right.
That's the variable that affects the cash flow.
Correct. Yeah. One other suggestion in terms of titling. I wonder, the title of the first page, I wonder if it should be capital replacement plan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the other piece of this is I'm all about free money, and I like the idea of grants. Mm-hmm. And wherever we can try to apply for help with grants, I think we'll help the plan. If if we can apply for a state DOT EMS grant and get an ambulance replaced, I mean, that just pushes that to the next life cycle of that unit.
Right? State's got a ton of that American reinvestment and blah, blah, blah plan money.
Yeah, they haven't. I don't know if they've fully decided exactly how that'll be spent. But yeah, I mean, those opportunities, we just have to keep our ear to the ground and look for those opportunities.
In the next 30 years, your job is to create $11.6 million in grants.
That's right.
That'll be a new evaluation item.
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good criteria.
This is really good work, Ryan.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep, that's great.
And guys and gals. More board discussion on this?
That's the difference between amateurs and professionals. So, well done.
Kevin, we know that you are a master at Excel.
Anything else on this, guys?
It's wonderful.
Chief's report.
Okay. Here we go.
How's those new trucks?
They are good. They're sitting in the parking lot. Nothing moves fast these days. So the chief's report, you can see our call reflection for the past couple of years there, so still getting busier. Roster is really unchanged. Resident programs are still full. I included kind of bullet points under that just so to reflect on the chief's report of when kind of coverage is being provided by the residence programs. Obviously, those guys are living at, guys and gals are living at the fire stations, so they're coming on calls at any time. But that is when they are paying their rent on duty. And those bullet items. Just this Monday, we finally got our launch. Chris did an incredible amount of work to get our day staffing up and running. So this is the first week it's going. So non-resident members of the department are filling day shifts per the plan I submitted to you guys back in June or May, whatever it was. Trainings are going as usual. Burning's still closed. We did get some moisture, but I mean, it's already dried out today, so it's getting better, but we're still not allowing burn permits. We had a structure fire within the district in the covered wagon trailer court. Was a very, kind of a unique one that we actually had an entrapment of an occupant in the structure. Thankfully, luckily, law enforcement got there and did an incredible job forcing entry on the building and was able to get that person out. We did have, we didn't have, but there were some injuries associated with it, which I said there four law enforcement officers were evaluated at the hospital. All four were released that day. I believe two or three of them went back to shift, so no significant injuries, but they were evaluated at the hospital. Training Captain Malone has started, as we talked about earlier. We did Catapalooza on the 23rd. This fall, and really it started earlier this year, we have had an incredible interest in the Highlight Fire Department, which I kind of talk about in this next item, but we started with, I think, roughly almost 30 applications coming into the fall, and that included from Catapalooza. But we had 20 people show up for our informational meeting. That's the most we've ever had. Like I mentioned, Mac has done the work to narrow that down to 8 that we're going to bring on. And they're starting tomorrow with the Fall Academy. The one thing we do ask when people show interest is how they learned about us. And it's a mixture. We get a lot of people from the website. And then a lot of people from Catapalooza. The other kind of mix we get is just word of mouth. When people tell interested volunteers where to go volunteer, they usually send them our way. Excuse me. Last item, well, one of the last items. Cheryl attached the Northwest Energy Bill, which shows the savings the solar panels providing us. So we figured we'd just keep that month to month attached, so you guys can kind of see what that kind of change is to each one each month. I have started work, and this Jason actually started this work, but it's been kind of shifted to emergency management, but we're looking at doing a county ambulance contract for third-party providers. So you guys, I'm sure you're aware, AMR currently operates with no contract. They just show up because they make money off of it, and nobody else does, type of a thing. So what we're actually looking at is locking into a contract agreement with an ambulance provider to provide ambulance coverage to areas that don't primarily do it. And it's actually a contract that would be signed by the county commissioners on behalf of emergency units in Gallatin County. It would still allow us to do our transporting plan as we've kind of planned. but it's kind of in the early phases. So that's ongoing. And nobody's gotten hurt. We haven't broken anything. Excuse me. Losing my voice.
Except we're about to have a right here in front of us. So a resident's going to ask us, what the hell are you guys doing going ahead with an ambulance service if the county's going to sign up for one?
I don't believe so, and I think we have easy justification. Excuse me, to say this is really unchanged in the plan. We are locking in kind of ALS services with AMR, but we're still going to provide our own BLS service.
So will that contract require that all of the participating entities kick in a portion of the cost then, or how will that contract be written?
It just says if you're here, it puts some standards in place of what you have to do. Mm-hmm. You have to maintain like 2 ambulances for the street.
So are they rewriting AMRs?
So excuse me, there is there currently is no contract in place. It is just AMR's willingness to do it.
No, I know, but AMR's with the City of Bozeman has a contract.
So the City of Bozeman has an ambulance ordinance that AMR just follows, but it doesn't necessarily lock AMR into that.
Oh, I see.
And to make things more confusing, this actually doesn't include the City of Bozeman, because the City of Bozeman's kind of doing their own thing anymore. So this would just cover areas of the county. So all the change it creates is just creates some standards for our ambulance protection of a third party, as far as keeping a certain number of ambulances on the street and keeping them maintained. Like currently AMR uses ambulances that have
$200,000.
Exactly.
Good dog.
So basically it says that's not allowed.
So somebody could come in to compete with AMR for this contract, right?
They could. Thank you, Chris. They could come in to compete. It also, the big concern with AMR is it requires them to, and it's been talked about, like give 6 months warning if they're going to pull out.
Yeah.
Because as it is today, I mean, we're fortunate enough to have our own ambulance and have a plan to transport, but for the areas that don't, AMR tomorrow could decide that they're not making money in Bozeman and say that's it and close it down. And for those areas that don't have a backup plan like we do, it leaves them uncovered, basically. So I think there would be easy justification, you know, to say we are still going to go on with our... Because if we write into this contract, or the county writes into this contract, that AMR has to have 2 ambulances on the street, the county's going to continue to grow, and that those 2 ambulances are going to continuously be tied up. So I think there's, excuse me, easy justification to say we still need to have our own plan in place to protect our district.
Have we heard anything about our ambulance?
We have. There's a couple things I had notes that didn't make it into my plan. The ambulance is finally being built, and we expect it in November. So
nice.
They finally got the Ford Transit to the factory, and it is being built.
Nice.
Other note I put, if you guys haven't been cut by Cottonwood, it is paved, and the work is wrapped up.
Thank you, Ken.
Yeah.
In regards to that, I contacted the fellow a couple days ago because Justin and I walked it Saturday, And I think we need to shore up the edges.
Yeah, I thought about that too.
And like they did along 19th Street when they paved that, they've got a 2-3 foot wide gravel thing that shores up. And, you know, I want to see if you guys can get the guys that make wider turns, you know, and kind of keep in the middle of the lane for a while. I don't know when it's appropriate to start driving on that. I'm sure you guys are going to want to try it tomorrow, but I don't know.
So they did give us, they completed the work last Thursday or Friday. And they said, keep all vehicles off till Monday of this week. They said, like, passenger vehicles. And then they said Friday for heavy trucks.
Okay.
And that was their recommendation they gave us. So,
I'm thinking about that and then maybe getting some oil down on that. I don't know what you want to call it. On the side of the building.
The old pavement that was already there.
Yeah.
If we reseal that, because there's a bunch of cracking.
We'll get a couple more years out of that if we do that.
Yep.
So we're kind of working on that to see if...
Do we want anything striped in the parking lot area?
I think that would help. I mean, just the appearance of the station. Now that that parking area is paved, to do some parking lot striping wouldn't be a significant cost and would help kind of just the overall look of the building.
Yeah. Just because sometimes people park one way, sometimes they're parking
right.
You know, different.
Are you taking away my freedom of choice, Justin?
Sorry.
Montana.
Well, park we can have a special one just for you that says board member.
Yeah. Any response back from the acoustic people?
Or no. So Colin is still working with them. Like I mentioned, the company that came and did the initial test just kind of went blank on us.
Yeah.
So there is another company that Colin's working on. We're just trying to get them lined up to come and do a sound test so they can give us recommendations.
Great.
And the other thing I was going to mention, so we did, if you guys noticed in the financials, we did purchase two command trucks from Billion, and they're just going through the building process, so they got to get radios, lights installed, striped, all that kind of good stuff. So.
Pickup trucks?
Pickup trucks, yeah.
Nice.
And with the help of the excellent sales service at Billion, we were able to get it on fleet pricing, so we saved a great deal of money
great.
Through that program.
So how many yards of material did you have an estimate for, like, two foot on each side of the border? Of road
certain mix? Areas, it's a little more than, you know, like, a couple of areas, I mean, there's exposure of, you know, 4 or 5 inches of asphalt there. And a couple of areas, there's only a couple inches. So, I don't know. They've got some machine. I watched them do it on 19th Street when they repaved it. And they got some sort of machine that kind of put it down and packed it in. And like a conveyor thing or something and put it out. Mm-hmm. But no, I don't have. He'll come back to us. I imagine he'll get it to us in the next few days.
Oh, so that's a service they could provide us then.
Yeah.
Night perfect.
Right.
Just in case anybody drives off this side and doesn't mess up.
That's a good idea.
So. Yeah, really good idea.
Yeah.
It'll last long.
Well, and then in the wintertime for plowing and stuff, if you get hit the edges, it just makes it everything work more smoothly.
But it looks like we got our money worth because we were supposed to get 3 inches compacted, and there's a lot of stuff that's 4 or 5 inches, so it seems like they put it down pretty heavy.
Yeah.
So.
And I don't know if you, I agree with you guys that they kind of rolled out by the training buildings, they rolled on one side of it, but the other side they just kind of like.
What's the back wheels that don't, you know, they kind of put the front wheels down the middle and the back wheels are going to take the edge.
So they can drive off.
Yeah, just so when the trucks are going off that, it doesn't break that edge. Yeah.
The whole side, like where the fuel tanks are,
right.
They go off right there, it's an abrupt edge.
Yeah, so it needs to be a little bit.
Anything else on the T-Support? Trustee activities? Anything going on? Pancake breakfast Saturday?
Saturday.
Next meeting? The 19th, is that right?
Yep.
How's that work for everybody?
Should be good.
Looking good.
All right. Anything else? Meeting is adjourned. Thank you, gentlemen.